This car is the most honest car you ever see.
It's been a dream ever since I've had it.
The first time I heard that engine screaming, I thought, I gotta have one of those.
For me, the cars have personality.
What's great about a BMW Classic is the community that surrounds it.
When you listen to that, that's why we're here.
Welcome to Classic Heart, the BMW Group Classic Podcast. This is JP, and I'm so happy that I have a dear friend talking to me and you guys here on our podcast. It's Brian Calvero, who is not only a car crazy person, he's also the one and only who founded Period Correct, one of my most favorite brands, I have to say. Welcome, Brian.
Hey, thanks, JP. Thanks for having me. What a pleasure it is to be here.
Thank you for joining us, Brian. And as I said, you founded the brand Period Correct. But for those who don't know you or the brand, could you just give us a little short introduction, please?
Yeah, so I'm Brian J. Calvero, the founder, creative director of Period Correct. And I created this brand, you know, truly to kind of tell the story of kind of my personal passion and interest in everything that has to deal with cars, from racing, motorsports, if you love classic cars, if you love architecture, kind of horology. This is kind of all the stuff that I grew up enjoying and just kind of being passionate about. And Period Correct was used in my everyday term, you know, Period Correct furniture in a 1950s home, or the wheels being Period Correct on a proper BMW, you know. So it's,
yeah,
it's something that always stuck with me, and I created kind of a, instead of the term, I created into a lifestyle brand, and I'm able to share stories and kind of through my apparel and my design.
What a cool situation you are, and what a happy person to do what you love for money as well. I mean, that's one of the best situations one can be in, I think.
Yeah, I mean, work never feels like work for me, which is quite nice. You know, I'm living my daily life. I don't have to be somebody I'm not. And being inspired by not only places I see, but kind of these objects. And the focus for the brand has been, you know, cars in general. So it's quite nice to travel and to kind of you know, take some short stories in the car culture and his design and aesthetic and some keywords and put it into the play of fashion. It doesn't feel like work at all.
I mean, you're one of the kindest person I met in my life, I have to say. Always smiling, always happy, and not like fake happy. It's a real, like, it's an absolutely honest happiness. But Brian, what's the background of yourself? So, I mean, where did it all start?
So I'll tell you this. I mean, I grew up in a small city called Cerritos in the LA County. So we were definitely LA. You know, in this small city, imagine a lot of culture there. Music from hip hop, skateboarding, BMXing, you know, break dancing, graffiti. I mean, you talk about a small city that was affected by what was possibly happening in New York and culture. So the roots, for some reason, in the city, I mean, we had some of the best DJs. The party scene was amazing. We used to, you know, wear polo 1992 apparel and go to these clubs and dance. I mean, it was quite a nice upbringing, besides the gang culture that was side by side in the city. So you had this kind of hip hop, very highly influenced by music and people trying to be different in the city, alongside this Japanese car culture that was brewing. You know, there was car races and, you know, happening all around me. I was too young at the time, so my brother, you know, was heavily into the tuning of Japanese kind of sports cars in those days, where they would all meet at the races. It was quite vibrant in those days. But I will tell you, my room was full of 1/18th scale models and 1/43rds. And I have old photos that I could share with you guys of all my Tamiya RC cars. I was always a fan of this stuff. Yeah.
So, but was cars a family thing? Like you mentioned your brother, is it also from your parents' side, or?
Yeah, you know, my father drove us in a Volkswagen. His dream car was, of course, the 911. And
of course,
you know, I mean, they took me to car shows at an early age. All my books and reading materials had to do with cars. So my earliest kind of memory, being 4 years old, was always based around my passion for cars. I could name every car make that drove by. So it was something, you know, just having the Hot Wheels. But, you know, unfortunately, my folks didn't have the means to buy some of those special vehicles in the day. Mm-hmm. But believe it, they knew which car was what. And
yeah, of course.
I grew up dreaming about them.
This is kind of a dream that maybe helped you also navigate through your career and life.
Definitely. You know, when you hear from your father, like, hey, yeah, that's a great car, but that's for, you know, rich people, or you hear mm-hmm. a saying like that. But my mom was totally the opposite. She would say, son, you'll get one day. It's in your future. You just Good. Need to work hard, you know. So, you know, I always had my hopes and dreams, and you want to prove dad wrong. So he loves it whenever I drive by in a new something.
I mean, that sounds lovely. And that shows also the power of family, where you can share your dreams, where you can share your ideas and what you like. And there's no bad feelings about it. It's really like honest, like, cool, you have it. I like it. And it's not like, oh, okay, this is the show-off guy coming again. Not in the family, I think.
Yeah. You know, my mom has this photo of me leaning on this particular car from a car show. Mm-hmm. And I promised her, I said, hey, one day, I actually, in the picture, I'm holding my wallet. And I went to this car show. It was a picture of me leaning on a Ferrari 512. Mm-hmm. And I told my mom, one day I'm going to show up and you're going to see me in this car in front of the house. And she was always encouraging. She said, yeah, son, one day.
Yeah.
And we actually bought that car and I pulled up and she was kind of in tears. And
nice.
Yeah, so it's quite nice to share these kind of stories, you know, with the family.
Very nice. So design was always part of your life, right? Well, is that right? Or I just learned that you have a connection also to the Eames family?
So I worked for the Eames family at the house as a docent for about 14 years.
Yeah.
So design has always been in my lifestyle. You know, in my earliest days, I wanted to be an architect. I used to join kind of dream house competitions through elementary. And mm-hmm. I used to draw these flat roof homes. And my mom used to go, how come your houses that you draw always have like a flat roof? And I said, well, you need to park the helicopter on top. So how could they land on a pitch roof?
Obviously.
But that was a great time in my life working inside of the Eames home as a docent and kind of, you know, I used to study architecture and kind of put myself through my own schooling. You know, my library and my home is full of books and that's my education. I do the research. So that's how I educated myself. And, but yeah, I always wanted to be an architect and, the Eames home is a very special place for me.
In general, it would be a special place, but if you've been so close, I mean, that's so part of the interior in a sense. I mean, that's something very special. When did Period Correct start?
So in the early days, how I got into apparel, and I have to thank my brother, Dennis, you know, he was my everything, still is, you know, like. Mm-hmm. You know, some people grow up and have a big brother who's like, doesn't allow you or to kind of bring you along or teach you or take you to the party. He was totally the opposite. So in our early days, he's always handed me down some clothes or brought me with him to the club at an early age and snuck me in. And he was fortunate or kind enough to kind of say, hey, I'm starting a clothing brand. Mm-hmm. I want you to be part of this brand. And I started a sales agency called Case Study Group.
Okay.
So in those early days, I basically learned the business inside out.
Yeah.
You know, I helped on marketing. I did all the sales globally. I never knew how to sell apparel, but he said, you know, you sell real estate, you sell life insurance, you sell dogs, you sell cars, wheels. He's like, you could do this. It's no different. So him entrusting me to help him with the family brand, that's where I got my education in the apparel world. And in those early trips to Japan, I kind of had this idea in my back pocket. He said, hey, one day you could do a brand based around your lifestyle. And what would that be? Is it the dream of you collecting and owning classic cars, or kind of what you grew up loving as a child? And I think that's what really gave me the idea. Is why I love the cars so much is because I still feel like a child.
Yeah.
I still feel like the kid when I was 9 years old, playing with my Hot Wheels or my diecast or my RC. It's the same feeling.
Yeah.
But I really got the idea early 2000s. You know, I told my brother, I said, hey, I want to do a brand. It hasn't really been done based around car culture and sharing some of these stories. Because to be honest, some of the kids from the inner cities, they don't know what an E9 CSL is, or they don't know the history of the E30 M3. And I said, I want to share it through apparel. And he, you know, he kind of supported me, and I had an opportunity, and I said, you know what, if I don't do it, you know, and kind enough, my wife was like, I said, hey, I'm thinking about doing this brand. She said, hey, it's probably not the right time, but when is the perfect time? Go for it. Try it.
No.
Yeah.
Always no.
That's right. If you don't do it, someone else is going to do it, and you're going to feel like that was your idea. And how many times has that happened to you? So yeah. Story of my life.
Yeah. But you mentioned that Period Correct is automotive culture inspired brand. How would you describe, with your own words, what's so special at the car scene in South California and SoCal?
I will say South California's car culture is quite diverse. So what you get in Southern California car culture, imagine you have you got 7 or 8 or maybe 9 meets on a Saturday morning, right? So you have
crazy
Japanese JDM car lovers. They meet in their own little parking lot and they feel like maybe they have their own club there. You have the Porsche guys that meet down the street from my house, you know, 6 a.m. and there's probably 30, 40, maybe even 50 Porsches there. And then you have Cars and Coffee that allows different makes and models happening. When I, in my early days, there wasn't 10 Cars and Coffees, there was one.
Yeah.
And I think what separates SoCal car culture is this diversity. The hot rod guys meet at the donut shop for years. Mm-hmm. It's like never changed. But I think you have this passion for like, and I like that because it's these, you know, you got these small groups and subcultures. And I think that's what makes SoCal car culture special. I mean, we don't have the greatest like car regulations with smog, et cetera, can't bring in this car, we have some pretty strict laws in that sense, but
yeah.
If you were to really focus and look at the car collections that are in our backyard, we have amazing car collectors and car crazy people in Southern California.
I mean, as you mentioned, like this culture is so diverse, because I imagine all the hot rod guys also coming dressed up in Period or Period Correct in that sense, with jeans, blue jeans and shirts and suspenders and having the haircut, the proper one. And then you have the JDM guys who are totally crazy dressed in silk sporting dress. And you know what I mean? All these kind of things. So what do you think is the secret behind this demand of so many car meets? You just mentioned it. It just started not too long ago that you have this diverse scene who has their own parties.
You know, there's many brands today that have cars as their backdrop at their booth at a trade show or mm-hmm. in their campaign in a lookbook. And there's so many brands popping up. When I launched Period Correct in 2014, there wasn't much of this going on, to be honest. Yeah. Maybe Ralph Lauren used a 507 BMW or a Bugatti Atlantique in one of his campaigns, but you didn't see this in street culture. And I'm not trying to say like, hey, we were the first or we were this, but we were part of the pioneering group maybe that was telling a story through car culture. And I think as a human, you know, this is like how we're trying to separate ourselves from, you know, other people in this world. What are you wearing, right? It's always been that in fashion. It's like, what shoes are you wearing? What watch are you wearing? What are you driving? So I think there's so many styles and so many to each his own kind of interests in this world.
Yeah, I mean, we see this, right? The diversity in different scenes is constantly growing, and I don't want to limit this to the car scene. Maybe it has something to do with the fact that we are, let's say, becoming more individual. I see it like this. Our society is becoming more open. Classic role models are more and more disappearing. More people have access to education, which is great. And so more people can discover their real talents and the way of life they want to choose. And to express this individuality, perhaps items from mass production just don't fit anymore. People look for classic cars of which there are only a few pieces, or want to modify their cars to come up with something totally unique and which has their name on it.
You're right. It's like it's become such a thing, you know, driving a vintage BMW, living in a modern or mid-century modern home. It's kind of a thing now, but when I was into it, it was not. But I think it's great that people have adopted that like likeness to these kinds of things, because when mid-century modernism was kind of created in our day, it wasn't, you know, it was kind of, there was a community here, which is now kind of a sought after community because it's a track full of mid-century modern homes. Well, nobody knows that was for low income housing. It was for minorities. And they created this for that. And now it's for like an elitist. So times have definitely changed and prices have gone crazy.
I really was not aware that mid-century was not as hyped as it is now. But in general, I think I really like that we start loving nice shapes again, or still do. And also in modern car design. I mean, you recently bought a Rolls-Royce Phantom, right?
Yeah, so, I mean, the Rolls-Royce Phantom, wow. Like, never thought it would be in my driveway today. It's a 2014. It's a Series 2.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, I just love the shape. I love the scale. And that's why I'm into cars. Yes. I love different driving experiences. And this car is like pure luxury. I mean, it is. You know, I'm wearing my baseball hat. I use it as a daily driver. I told my wife, I said,
really?
I was in the market. Yeah, I was in the market for a sedan. And we haven't had a sedan in a while. We have three SUVs outside. And I said, look, one day the price is going to come down. This car is pretty much a big BMW. So I teased the first photo. I said, I bought a big BMW because I learned that a lot of the part numbers are BMW part numbers, and the engine is actually kind of the same block that came off a 760. Obviously, it's much different, but it is what it is.
Yes.
And driving this thing, shifting it, it feels, I mean, it's very refined, and I'm not going to tell you it's a BMW. It's a Rolls-Royce in every way possible, but
yes,
it has that familiarity. I feel like I'm driving an oversized 7 Series.
Yes, it's like that. I mean, that's one of my ultimate favorite cars. And also, I think you got a blue one, right?
Yes, it's blue.
Yes,
with this kind of brown hide, almost kind of like a basketball color interior. And
yeah.
I've been after that navy blue. That was like one of my favorite colors. It's the brand's flagship color as well.
Yeah.
But I said that I could have bought a black or white maybe 10 times. And I've been looking at them since 2008. I seen it as early as 2005 in Tokyo. There was two parked outside, which was kind of ironic, outside of a out of a sushi restaurant we were in, and we were in Ginza.
Nice.
Driver properly sitting in the front, and I said, oh, I'm gonna drive mine, and I would love to own one day, and God is good, I'm here, and I drive it. I love it.
It's an amazing car. I mean, and that yet again, I think they did a great job in reinventing where Rolls-Royce came from and getting the company DNA, the brand DNA, 100% on the point. And yes, of course, they have BMW part numbers because they belong to BMW. So what? Still they're around.
Yes.
Maybe if BMW would not have stepped in, they would not be around. And I really love that car. Is yours an extended wheelbase or the regular one?
It's the regular one. I thought, I was thinking, there's an extended wheelbase.
Yeah.
I said, this is already pretty big, and but I enjoy it. And I just love the scale of this thing. It is a boat.
Yeah. I mean, we upset Rolls-Royce a little bit because we got a car. I remember it was, when was this? Yeah, I think the car just came out and they gave us, because we said, oh yeah, we want to do like a story in the Engadine Mountains, going to St. Moritz, doing a great thing. You know, at that time we had the Classic Driver Racing team and we asked our race captain to take the car down the Julia Pass and really make it drift. So the article is called Mountain Wafting in a Rolls-Royce Phantom. And it was impossible. So he was frustrated. He said, okay, this car is so well balanced. I can do whatever I want to do. If it's not like a slippy surface, there's nothing I can do. Nothing. And Rolls-Royce at that time being very upset that we took that, because that's not how you drive Rolls-Royce. No, it's not, but it was big fun. And still the article performed very well. So
I love that.
I'm in love with that car. And I'm really, yeah. I mean, you have to sometimes take things out of context and do something completely different, unexpected, still with respect. So we didn't ruin the car. We didn't broke the car. So we give it back in one piece and then cleaned in perfect condition. So there's nothing happened because, you know, we're not the ones to overdo it because it's not our stuff. We get it in trusted hands, like, and so we have to have responsibility.
See, I love that. I love that.
And it's going to be, that's going to be definitely on the list of a future classic, 100%, 100%, especially yeah. The limousine.
People always ask me, they're like, hey, you drive that like every day? Like, are you driving? I don't like, yeah. You know, I don't understand. And look, nothing against people who want to drive, you know, a Ford truck as their daily driver or a Prius. But man, life's so short. I'm a car guy. I love aesthetics. And I'll tell you, I drive everything. Like people will say, you know, you drive the 1600 BMW and then you'll jump in an Abarth and you'll take the E30 M3 to the Rolls-Royce Phantom. And then I'll take, you know, the GT3 as a day. Like, they're all cars. And I feel like for me, that's something I don't try to baby them around at all. You know, I know guys that wash them 10 times a day. I just drive the things. I love that. Yeah. I love the functionality of them.
A dear friend of mine was the head historian at Bugatti, Julius. And he said to me, you know what? The biggest challenge of the Veyron is that you don't see it on the road because people keep their things in the garages. And still they were very, very pleased that this car has this still the super icon status. But he said that's the biggest problem, because if you don't see cars on the road, they not exist in the general mind of people. They should be amazed by design and by the look and by the sound and everything. Yep. So I think it's very good to drive them.
I agree with you 100%. And I say that when I'm driving on the freeway, I don't see another classic around me. So it looks odd and you're wondering, why are people looking at you? But it's because, you know, you're driving something different. But it's sad that a lot of these cars are stored away for Saturday morning and they could drive it for 1 hour and then it has to go back into the garage. I'm totally the opposite of that.
This is the message from Brian to the world. Drive your cars, no matter how valuable they are, do it and create memories and stories. And you mentioned that Peugeot Correct is a form of storytelling in the ways of automotive culture storytelling. Could you elaborate on that one a little bit? So what can people understand by that?
Well, imagine a 16-year-old kid who's on his skateboard who didn't grow up watching Group B or know about racing or doesn't know who Senna is or, you know, who doesn't have the back history that some of us have in growing up around this type of culture or reading and magazines and et cetera. So, you know, they'll come to my shop and they'll say, hey, what does Group B 1982 mean? And then I'm able to tell them, hey, take a look. Why don't you Google search it? Go on YouTube, look at a video. But it was a radical time in racing where, you know, cars were twin charged with turbo and supercharged. They're like, what? Mm-hmm. You know, so I think telling these stories, especially like even the story of the Roof family, you know, how much history Aloisa's family had in that industry and kind of these stories that go back. But all of these kind of storytelling is kind of, it goes back to just becoming very organic. And I love the people behind it, you know, behind the stories, who the race car driver was, who the family behind the brand or so we're able to introduce those to kind of maybe people who didn't have that fortune to learn about it in their early days.
So there are many ways of transporting this kind of message. So you can write books, you can take photos, and in your case, you can take garment and little items that people love. With, I mean, I remember the lighters with the E9 on the back, I think. Was it E9, if I correct?
Oh, it was the E30 M3, yeah.
Oh, sorry, that was the E30, sorry. I thought, yep. From afar, I only saw a picture. So, but I mean, so you can communicate through many, many ways, right? So you choose the way of garment and the little cool things to have.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I've always been kind of a collector as a child. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it was stamps or basketball cards or cars, this is what I grew up around. So I feel like, hey, if they can't quite afford that E9 CSL or that M1, well, maybe they can buy, you know, the memorabilia, or they could buy a hat that kind of says motorsport on it to talk about the history of the vehicle. So these are all like things that, you know, when I started Period Correct, I felt like, you know, I have a bit strong mission, you know, and kind of to bring, you know, some of these inner city kids to some of these places that were only for maybe an elitist, bringing different races and minorities and people who are unfortunate to see, like, hey, you could come to Pebble Beach too, right?
Exactly.
So it's a big goal of ours. Yeah, we have this thing called a big initiative for this year is called From the Streets to the Lawn.
Nice.
And, you know, I hope to kind of do this thing and bring culture. You know, I have a lot of friends in, you know, in the music world. And I, you know, I had this conversation with a big music icon, and I won't name his name, but I said, hey, look, why shouldn't it be you that's showing a 250 GTO on the lawn this year? Why are you leaving it for Hilfiger or Ralph Lauren? Like, if I had the means, it's a dream of mine to be there one day.
Yeah.
I said, why not? So, you know, I feel like I'm going to be a segue for people to say, and I think that's what this fandom kind of represents. You know, when I drive out there, I got kids in my DMs and kids in my city, and I got a lot of kids that kind of look up to me for I don't know what reason, or maybe it's the cars, but I will say, I want them to know, like, if I could do it, you could do it, you can have it. You know, I said, I think that's what I represent.
I love that. I can imagine that you are quite inspiring and encouraging for young people.
I'll tell you this story. I had USC's School of Business approach me, and they said, Brian, we'd love for you to speak at our business class for three different classes. And for a long time, I would say no. I said, no, you know what? Hold on, let me think about it. And I talked to my mentor of mine, and he says, well, why don't you want to do it? I thought, you know, your earliest prayer was to inspire kids and to give an opportunity to kind of share the journey. And he said, is it because of the zeros in your account? And I said, kind of. Shouldn't I be exactly where I want to be in my career and financially? And he's like, Brian, go share now. Share while you're in the trenches. Share your past mistakes and share where you're going. And I was able to speak to that class at USC School of Business, and half of those kids are still my friends today. Wow. They inspired me more than I inspired them.
Yeah, I love that. I think it's always very important to connect with young people and thus reconnect with your own history, right? And Brian, speaking about history, what is your car legacy? What is your own car history? Do you still own your first car?
I still own the first classic car that I ever purchased, which is the BMW E30 M3.
Nice. The E30, is that the period of cars that you like, or is it hard to say?
You know, I think being into cars my whole life and kind of growing up, I grew up in our neighborhood. There was a gentleman in our city of Cerritos who was quite the race car driver as far as street racing.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody could beat him in his little Civic. And he was one of the first guys I saw in our city with the E30 M3. And I remember because I used to play tennis at this park called Regional Park. And I seen this car coming around the corner with these boxy flares, and it was that car. Since that day, I fell in love with, wow, someone could really own this car from our city, right? And I only seen it through magazines and books, et cetera. But yeah, I definitely, in my early days, I really appreciate the 90s and 80s era design. But I think as I gotten older, and even in the earlier days, I mean, if you look at the models I collected, I mean, I love the 60s. And I think the era of the 60s is pretty hard to beat. The lines of those cars, I mean, they look fast. They look fast while they're parked. And they look like a piece of art.
That's true.
They look like a piece of art. Yeah. They look like a piece of art. And for me, JP, it's always it's never, you know, the stuff under the hood, like the horsepower and kind of the mechanics is always, the engineering is a bonus for me. But, you know, I'm a designer, so I think aesthetics is first and foremost, you know, for me. And that's my first love when I see a car.
I absolutely share that fascination. I think it's amazing that the E30, built by a German brand, was such a success in the US and still is. There's a huge BMW community in the US, right?
I don't see that many makes with enthusiasts that have that much pride. They're like BMW or nothing. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
So it's like they're diehard BMW and they will whore all the parts. They will only drive BMW. I mean, it's quite, you know, I like that. That subculture to me is where I started.
I mean, your passion for cars started with die-cast model cars, like with little tiny models. Let's talk about a very important collabo you did with Mattel, more precise, with Hot Wheels, because they ask you, the design of Period Correct, to create a set of Hot Wheels model cars. Group B it was, right?
Yes. We did about 5 different versions.
Yeah. Sold out in 2 minutes?
Yeah, sold out in 2 minutes. And that's funny because that's how I met Chris Granger actually on our first drop. He was actually a buyer, a customer.
Are you joking?
And I heard a story on a podcast and it was sold out. And I actually had one and I sent him the very first drop. And that's how we met.
Yeah, we have to just, so Chris Granger is the CEO or the acting CEO at the moment at IWC, the watch brand. And I love the fact that his passion for your Hot Wheels, the Period Correct Hot Wheels, led into a collaboration with IWC because you became the face of a watch campaign as well.
Imagine that one toy basically became kind of an intro to me and one of my best friends today. And I respect Chris so much and what he's done for me and the brand.
Yes.
And he was one of the first guys to say, hey, Brian, you're going to help us do this campaign. And imagine, I was like, wait, what? I go, you use Lewis Hamilton, Tom Brady, Tom Cruise, and you want to use me?
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, I think you're wrong. And he was like, no, exactly that. And I'm very grateful to that man for sure.
And he is absolutely automotive crazy. Everything that has an engine in it is like his excitement. But I mean, coming back to the Hot Wheels collabo, how would you describe the success of the Period Correct Hot Wheels?
Yeah. I mean, imagine you had a line of 500 grown-ups. I was like, where are all the kids? They slept at our store, Jake. Yeah. They slept at the store overnight from 11 p.m., and waited for the release at 11 a.m.
Yeah,
and
amazing.
all my neighbors on the block were like, hey, what's going on? What are you doing? Why are they lined up? Why are they tenting outside of our shop? But I learned really quick why. They were $25, and then on eBay, they were $3,500.
But more important to me is, as we, you know, we just spoke about this, that you grew up with these scale models and stuff like that. What was your first thought or your feeling? Describe that one when you holded the finished packed Hot Wheels product, the first one, in your hands, as being the one sitting here saying, "Hey, I'm Brian. I'm Brian from this little city or this little community, and I collected cars in scale, and now I'm doing them, or Hot Wheels is doing something together with the brand I created." What was in your mind? Did you call your mother?
Yeah, of course. I mean, everything I think I've made, she's collected each and every one item. She's packed every single item. But
yeah,
but I was very proud. That was a dream, getting to design something that you used to play with when you were a kid and now having your own version. I know guys today and collectors today that still have them on their desk. And but these objects, these collectibles, it's important to me because it's what makes me happy. I still buy and collect today different objects and brands that I like. So it's flattering to see something you dream of doing in early days come into fruition. But yeah, I'm still in awe.
Yeah, I could imagine with all the things going on. Amazing. But Brian, what's coming up for Period Correct?
So Period Correct is, you know, we've done a lot till this time, but I will tell you, like, you know, we actually been working on building a proper team. So, you know, I pinch myself every day because it's still going since 2014 and we're barely getting started.
Yeah.
So I want to make sure we have it just right before we leak some news here and there. But I have all these ideas for the brand and we have some great collaborations coming up. One of them I could tell you is with 24 Hour Le Mans.
Oh, really?
So there's so many exciting things coming for the brand and activations and experiences. So our kind of dream in this brand is still just beginning. So I'm excited to get this one across the finish line.
I'm super excited about the things to come. But what are your personal wishes for this year, 2024?
Yeah, I mean, 2024 for me and my wishes for PC is to just continue servicing the community, making sure I don't leave them behind, making sure even though they see us kind of, I don't want to say pivot, but grow some other categories in the industry and even bring and introduce some luxury products to the brand. I don't want to forget about the following that has supported me since day one. So I'm excited about that. Just focus. I'm dialed in right now for 24.
Very good. And I'm sure the dial-in will be successful and the calls will be answered 100%.
Thank you. Thank you for that, JP. Means a ton. Means a ton.
Likewise, I can only return that. And that means a lot. Thank you very much for joining today, Brian. It's really a pleasure and super exciting. And for those who tuned in, thank you very much for joining the session today. And we hope you take something out of it and enjoy it. And if you like what you listen to, please do us a favor and give us a high star rating or leave us comment. And also thank you already, everyone who sent in ideas for guests. We take them and also working on them to make that real. Keep them going. That's very, very helpful. If you have ideas of a passionate person, just invite him, send him, share the ideas with us and the team through all the channels you might know. And of course, a big thank you to the team behind of that podcast, which is Friederike von Königswald, who takes care that we do the right things and speak the right stuff as our editor. Then we have Alex and Marcus from Scenario Studio in Munich, who made the sound quality ready and helped us here. And of course, Robin from Shot One. Brian, thank you so much for joining.
Thank you. Thanks, JP.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Bye-bye, everyone.